Right. Well, first of all, I'd just like to thank the organisers for inviting me. It's always a great pleasure to be in Toronto. So today's talk is going to be, of course, about directed walk models of polymer phase transitions. And the subtitle is A Tale of One Napkin, which will become clear pretty soon. So in the beginning, and the beginning was 1992, as Steve said, in terms of collaboration at least, but I think I actually met you. In 85 odd, when he visited King's College, but we didn't get working together until 92 was the first publication. So in the beginning, there was a napkin, and that is the napkin. This is actually a scan of the napkin. So this napkin was created in 1992 by Stu in some coffee shop somewhere. And we're discussing a problem, and the problem was, as you see by the question mark here, to do with whether these two curves intersected or not. Now, it's not a white napkin, and the reason for that is it was pinned to my notice board, which happened to be the part of the notice board where the sun used to shine, and it slowly went sepia, and finally it actually fell off and disintegrated. So this is 15 years old, this napkin. So I don't actually have the original anymore. So the problem is this question mark. So it was a napkin, but no light. I find this problem really interesting because more from a sort of psychological point of view than a mathematical one, because it was a problem where we knew next to nothing about what was happening at all with the mathematics, how to solve the problem, and what was going on. So this is where we were discussing it. And at this stage, it was a question of whether these two curves intersected. And if they intersected, we would have a phase transition. But if this lower curve carried on indefinitely underneath the upper curve, we would have no phase transition. So the object was to try and prove that this curve intersected the other one. So the model that this napkin came from was the simple model of polymer collapse, interacting partially directed walks. So this is the model here. Actually, I think this might be a bit easier. This is the model. So it's a directed walk on a square lattice. You start at the origin, and you only allow north steps, south steps, or east steps, and it's self-voiding. And we put the collapse bit in. It's a self-interaction between the monomers of the polymer, and these are these red edges of the path. So it has a certain number of steps, in this case 24 steps, and these we'll call contacts or nearest neighbor interactions, and there's 10 in this case. So of course, what you want to do is calculate the partition function. So I've called this interaction the Boltzmann factor mu. So I ran out of Greek characters, as you'll see from the rest of the talk. So we want to sum over all paths of a given length. So n here is the number of steps. Mu, c here, the number of these contacts. So here's an example of three-step paths. I'm drawn all of them here, so there's some symmetry reflection ones. But basically, this is the first one here where we get a contact, and there's its mirror image. So this is the 2 mu, and there's 9, if you go through them all, of the other non-interacting cases. So we want the partition function as always. Free energy, limiting free energy, and failing the ability to be able to calculate the free energy directly, what is actually easier is in fact calculating the generating function of the free energy. So x here, and throughout the rest of the talk, will be length generating variable. I mean, you can think of this as a grand canonical ensemble, but I prefer to think of it just as a mathematical device for getting the free energy and actually computing something. So the advantage of that generating function is, of course, if x is the closest singularity of this generating function on the positive real axis, and the free energy is the inverse of that singularity. So to compute the free energy and hence the phase transition and so on, you want, of course, non-analyticities in the free energy as a function of the interaction parameter mu. You want to look at the radius of convergence of this generating function. So I'm not going to go into details of the form of the solution and how we did it and so on at the moment. So for these interacting partial directed walks, the generating function sort of takes this form of the ratio of two functions, just call them P and Q, and P and Q themselves depend on what are called Q Bessel functions. So here's a sort of example of a typical Q Bessel function. And Q here is the product of the length generating variable and the interaction parameter mu. And the important thing is here that singularities in the generating function can arise in two different ways. One is if the denominator vanishes, in other words, Q goes to 1, and the other is if P and Q themselves have singularities. And you can see here in the Q Bessel functions, if Q goes to 1, then you're going to get a 0 in the denominator. So the singularity to G basically arise from zeros here and zeros in the terms of the expansion, the Q Bessel function. So here's that plot of the radius convergence of G. So this is taken from the original 1992 paper, so the variables are a bit different here, but the general idea is there's this curve here, which of course is this curve, and the other curve here is a hyperbola, it's basically Q equals 1, which is X mu, and so what we managed to show in that paper, finally, you know, after quite a lot of work following this discussion, was in fact we proved that this curve did indeed intersect the hyperbola at this point. So that gave us the phase transition for this interaction partially directed walk. So that was the beginning. So now I'll just go on to discuss a few other models that looked at with Stu and one or two which Stu wasn't directly involved in. So the first one is polymer absorption. So this today is a really simple model. In the early days it wasn't quite so simple in terms of solving it, but today it has been considered a real simple model. So the idea here is we've got a lattice path this time, so above a wall, so again on a square lattice. Here you can do northeast steps and southeast steps. So this is actually a Dick path or a Ballot path if you end at some height y. So you start here and each time you return to the wall you pick up the Boltzmann factor here, kappa. So this is a return polynomial, or it's just the partition function for a single path or walk above a wall, and we, you know, sum of all configurations of a given length, kappa to the number of contacts this time, the contacts being returns to the surface. So for example, if y is 0, then we have Dick paths, and if they 6 steps, then there's 5 configurations, and those are the 5 configurations. And you see, for example, this one's got 3 contacts, 2 contacts, and so on. And so the partition function here is this polynomial in kappa. So the object is calculate z, or log z, or failing that, the generating function for the partition function. So for this model, there's a phase transition. So it's a simple phase diagram. This is one parameter kappa. The low temperature phase is kappa greater than 2, so the critical temperatures are kappa equal to 2. It absorbs onto the surface, so there's a positive density of contact, and in the high temperature phase, it sort of flops about above the wall. The solution, for me anyway, doesn't seem to interest many people, but for me anyway, the solution for this problem can be written as a constant term of a rational function in this variable rho. So by constant term here, I mean you take the Lorentz expansion of this function in the variable rho, about a punctured disk at the origin, and you just pick off the constant term of that Lorentz expansion, and that will give you the polynomial. So n here, you see this generates binomial coefficients, and this picks up linear combinations of the binomial coefficients. So if you do that, you can get the partition function explicitly as this sum with that binomial coefficient sitting here. So that was 9 years later. So apart from just calculating the partition function, of course, for critical phenomena, you're interested in critical exponents and finite state scaling and so on. So, of course, the partition function depends on two parameters, the contact Boltzmann factor and the length. So you can look at n going to infinity and kappa going to the critical temperature, kappa C. And this is sort of diagram, and this is a finite state scaling form. And the nice thing about this sort of model is it's sort of the simplest non-trivial model where you can actually compute the scaling function explicitly. So there's not many examples in statistical mechanics where you can compute this scaling function. So in this case, it comes out to be just related to the complementary error function. So this was in this paper with Alex somewhere and John Essen. So that's what's quite nice, it's, that you can actually get the scaling function explicitly, and of course from the asymptotics of this you can work out the various critical exponents. The next model, I think this is the second or third of about four, is coming back to work done with Stu. This is more recent work to do with colloidal dispersion, and in particular this problem of steric stabilization and sensitized flocculation. And the basic idea here is you have these sort of colloid particles in a solution with polymers floating around, and the polymer can interact with the surface of these colloid particles. So in this case, we're allowing for two different interaction strengths. So the interaction strength on this lower one and a different, possibly different interaction strength on the upper colloidal particle. And as always, we model that real simply. And in this case, you can see it's similar to the absorption problem, but now because of the two colloidal particles, we've now got two walls. So this the simple model here is a Dick path or Motzkin path or whatever your preferred path is in a strip between two walls a certain distance L apart. So now we've got Boltzmann factors associated with the lower wall kappa, and we allow for a different Boltzmann factor for the upper wall omega. So this one has a phase diagram, and it's basically just the absorption phase diagram, but of course now we've got two parameters, kappa and omega. It can, the polymer can absorb on the bottom wall, in this case, or it can absorb on the top wall, depending on the strength of kappa and omega, and there's a high temperature desorb phase. But more interesting is the fact that this interaction with the surface can introduce a force between the walls, or the a force between the colloidal particles. So here's a plot of the forces superimposed on the phase diagram. So it wasn't so obvious to me in the early days that in fact this can generate either a repulsive force or an attractive force. And of course between those two regions there's a zero force line which doesn't coincide with the phase boundaries in any way. So for this model you can actually get an equation for that zero force line, kappa plus omega equals kappa omega. So as you can see, the number of authors is increasing here. Andrew's come onto the scene. Oh, you're awake, Andrew. Yes. And Gary as well. And Gary's here. Yes, and so the force, this is the force between the walls, can be long range of power law things, or power law decay with length, or short range and so on. So that's the interesting thing for this model. So you can solve this one and get the that force diagram. So the next model is the forced extension work. So this is now very much work in progress. So I'm not going to say too much about this model because Gary will be talking in more detail about it. And the other one, this one, Jennifer, in fact, will be talking about it tomorrow. So, but the idea is, so here you have a single wall and a single polymer. It can absorb with a contact kappa, but now you have you're allowed to apply a force to sort of pull it off the surface. Or in the case of partially exited walks, where you have a collapse problem, you can pull vertically, sort of unzipping these contacts. Or there's another case where you can pull it horizontally, again up unzipping the contacts, as you would do here. So the interesting thing about this is, of course, the behavior of the model as you change the strength of this force. So, without saying too much about it, you get force curves. So there's a critical force. So these two curves refer to this absorption case we'll be pulling off the surface here. This one we're kind of stuck on. We've got partway with understanding this one, but the generating function for this problem is quite a complicated Q-series functional equation, and getting the asymptotics out of it is proving troublesome. So for this one, you can actually solve this problem exactly because you have a partition function. You can write a partition function for a path ending at a certain height, and you can do the asymptotics with steepest descents and so on. So you can get everything out explicitly. So the interesting here is there's a critical force curve associated with pulling this off the surface, and then you can also compute the force extension curve. So y here is the extension normalized by the length of the path, and it has this flat region, and then it takes off. So this sort of constant force here, this one here, and then once the polymer has actually been pulled off the surface almost, then it you're just pulling against an entropic thing, and it just diverges at one here. So this is work with Jennifer and Andrew, but as I said, still work in progress. So those are the models. So that was essentially part one of two-part talk. So the other half is I just want to review or go over the four primary methods for solving these problems. Now, I'm not going to go into any details for any particular model, but I'm just going to give you the general idea and illustrate it with one or two of the simpler examples. And then I'll finish off with some moderately new results to do with this. So there are, I'm going to talk only about four methods. There are other methods, but they tend to be more isolated in the sense that they only tend to work for specific models and not work across several types of models. So the four methods, the first one is the Templey method. So this goes back to 1992 when Stu was in Melbourne working on that partially directed wall collapse problem with Tony. And Tony had somehow dug up or stumbled across... Tony here? You right? Yeah, there's Tony. Had stumbled across a paper by Templey, which I think was 56 or thereabouts, where he had had this method for dealing with partially directed walks, but not with the not with that contact interaction, just the plane walks themselves. So that's the Templey method. I'll say a bit more about that in a second. The other method is a functional equation method. Now, I add this parameter k because there's several types of different functional equations, and this k is just k for kernel because of the particular form of this functional equation method. The third one is a very standard method in system mechanics, transfer matrix method, but here we use it for exact solutions. And the third one is not so common in combinatorial circles type system mechanics, and that's Green's function method. So this one, of course, in solid state physics, particle physics and so on, is used extensively, but as far as I know, it's not used very much in combinatorics or finding generating functions and things like that. So I'll just briefly go through those four methods. But, yeah. Templey method. So this one, as I said, we used to find a generating function for this collapse, interacting partially directed warp. And the method relies on the fact of on concentrating on the last segment, the rightmost segment of the walk. So what you do is you look at the subset of all walks where the last segment has R steps in it. So this is a partition function for the subset of all the walks where the last segment is of length R. Call this GR. And the whole idea behind the Templey method is that it gets a recurrence relation for this generating function for paths which with R steps in the final segment. So here the generating function for this particular model. So it's just second order. So it's GR plus 1 R and GR minus 1. But the really interesting thing about this is when you have an interactions, it's not constant coefficient recurrence relation. If Q was 1, so Q is the length generating variable times this contact fugacity. So when that's 1, then this is then just a constant coefficient recurrence relation, and you can solve it in the standard sort of way as you do as an undergraduate with the substitution, just put GR as mu to the R type thing. But when it picks up this Q to the R factor, that changes the nature of the problem totally. And in fact, this sort of equation, as far as I know, first occurs in work by Ramanujan, where he in fact studied a simpler class of these functions. So the way this is in fact solved is with an ansatz. So if it was constant coefficient, you just have this lambda to the r, but this q to the r requires this extra q series part. So this is an ansatz due to Privman, Schrakic, and Glasser. And you just substitute this, and you end up with q series type solutions containing those Bessel functions, those q Bessel functions that I mentioned, algebraic if q is 1. But of course, if you want the length generating function for not constrained to a final step length of r, then of course you have to do the further sum over r to get the full generating function, which may or may not be a problem. So the second method, this functional equation method, this one doesn't go for the generating function g, but what it computes is, so g here was just the length generating function, so you generate it on all paths of you know, length n. This also generates on the height of the last step. So this y is the analog of this r here. So it's basically this equation where you're generating an r, but you have an s to the r. So I'm just going to look at it in the context of the absorption problem, because this is rather simpler. So this is supposed to be a general Dick path. You've generated on the length, so you have all lengths here. This g here is all lengths. And s was the final height, y was the final height of the Dick path. And so what you do is you get a functional equation for f of s. So this is the length and height generating function. And the general idea is to consider what happens when you add an extra step onto the end of a path. So this is, you know, if you're coming from above, you pick up an x divided by s, and if you're coming from below, you pick up an x times s. So, saying too much about that, that's sort of where the functional equation comes from. So what does that functional equation look like? Well, here it is. It's not too bad. It's, in this one, it's pretty simple. It's functional, but basically in this case, because we have f of naught. So this is f of s in terms of f of naught. But in general, this can get quite complicated. You can have derivatives of f, and you can have f when you have a q series type problem here. If you wanted the area under the path, you would have f of q of s and so on. And in other cases, you get sets of coupled equations. So this can get pretty complicated. But in the case of Dick path, it's fairly simple. So here's a kappa, and so on. So that's typically the sort of thing you get with this functional equation method. And you solve it by this kernel method, hence the K here. So I'm not going to say too much about that. Well, I'm not going to say anything about that. The third of four methods is the transfer matrix. So those who've, you know, done system mechanics will know transfer matrices well. So I'll just illustrate this with the Dick path in between two walls, so two weights, kappa and omega. And just look at the general case, starting at height y primed and ending at height y with the separation between the walls of L. So the transfer matrix is this tri-diagonal matrix. Generally ones on the two off diagonals, except for two places where you put a kappa and an omega. And this would be the matrix for L equal to 4. 4 by 4 matrix. So as most of you will know, the partition function for walks which start at y prime and end at y will be the y prime matrix element of the nth power of the transfer matrix. So for this method to be of any use, you need at least one way of dealing with it is to look for some way of finding the nth power of this matrix for general L. Of course, you can always do this numerically by putting L equal to a particular value and then dealing with that. So okay, the standard way of doing this is to diagonalize the transfer matrix. So you need to find all eigenvalues if you want an exact solution, and of course all eigenvectors. So if you can do that, then you can write the partition function to sum over all eigenvalues. Basically these are the components of the left and right eigenvectors. And the eigenvalues are given by the zeros. Because this is tridiagonal, it's a Jacobi matrix, so eigenvectors and eigenvalues arise from orthogonal polynomials. So this is actually a polynomial of degree L plus 1, and the eigenvalues are zeros of that polynomial. So you have to sum over the zeros of the polynomial and then you have to substitute in the zeros in the lower order polynomials, the degree k. So if you want an explicit expression going this way, you have to deal with the sum over zeros, where your polynomials have two arbitrary parameters and degree l plus 1. So l is generally bigger than 3 or 2. If kappa and omega are 1, then it's not too bad. These are Chebyshev polynomials. You can work everything out explicitly. You can get the zeros, and you can actually do the sum. It's all just geometric series. But as soon as you put these parameters in, then you start getting into trouble trying to evaluate this kind of sum. But, remarkably, this sum can be written as a constant term of a rational function in this fashion. So this is the constant term, as I showed earlier, with omega 1, but with kappa. You can get the kappa and omega case, but it's just messier, so I haven't given it to you. So this single sum is just replaced by doing a geometric series and picking off the constant term. So last method, briefly. Much more? 5 minutes? Yeah. So the Green's function method, this is basically just an extension of the transfer matrix method, where you split the matrix into a free and perturbed part. So you put the kappa and omega into the matrix V, and you keep all the ones in the matrix H. So the dots are zeros. And instead of going for the nth power of the transfer matrix, you go for the generating function. So you now generate on the n, and so that gets rid of the problem of getting the nth power, but it changes the problem into getting the inverse of this matrix. So 1 minus xt, inverse, you take the yy prime thing, and then you'll get the yy prime matrix element. So g is the partition function for walks from y prime to y. But using a Green's function approach, you split it up and you get these sort of equations, typically writing the full matrix whose inverse you want in terms of the matrix H, which, as I said earlier, is much easier to evaluate these Chebyshev polynomials. So this is very typical of a solid state physics type thing, and you can write in this form or this form. So depending on the nature of V, in this case it's fairly simple, there's various ways for solving and getting this inverse if you want a sort of Green's function approach. So the last bit I'll just mention is, in fact, this is a pseudo-theorem, it's not a real theorem. It's a theorem for each particular model, but if you want to class the models together, then it's a pseudo-theorem because there's no general theorem for what type of model it is. So in fact, all these four methods are mathematically equivalent in the sense that, you know, if you give me any one of these things, you can go mathematically to any one of the others. So I'll just demonstrate that. We've really seen the Templi one, we've really seen the Green's function to transfer matrix is really the same thing. For the Templi, you just take, for example, the functional equation, and you just have to remember that f of s is generating on the length of the height of the last step here, and you just substitute this into the functional equation and equate coefficients of s. And if you equate coefficients of s, then you get this sort of typical Templi generating function with some initial conditions. So Templi is really functional equation and Templi equivalent in the sense of just equating coefficients. We just saw the equivalence between transfer matrix and Green's function. The Green's function is really a way of splitting the problem into something which is easy to do, the H, and something which is not so easy. The new one, if you like, is the relationship between the Green's functions and the functional equation. So, of course, the Green's function is very similar to transfer matrix. So this is really, this equivalence here is really saying that the functional equation and the transfer matrix method are essentially the same thing, at least mathematically. Combinatorially, you set them up differently, but mathematically, you know, if you give me the transfer matrix, I can just work out the functional equation, or given the functional equation, you can just work backwards the transfer matrix. So, for example, this was the functional equation. So if we want to go from the Green's function equation down to this functional equation, the trick is somehow you have to get this s to the y into the problem. And you can't just multiply this matrix equation by s to the y and then sum on s to the y because of this identity matrix here. If you do that and then sum on y, you'll end up with a 1 over 1 minus s. And there's no 1 on 1 minus s here. So you have to be a little bit trickier. And in fact, what does it is a similarity transformation by this diagonal matrix. So So you basically have to do similarity transformation of the Green's function equation, and the effect is then to multiply every matrix element by S to the difference of their indices. So if you similarity transform this, of course, that just changes M to M bar or G to G bar, but of course leaves the 1 as 1. If you write that in terms of the matrix elements, it then looks like this. And so you see here you have, if I put Y prime to 0, then I have exactly this. So if I sum now on Y, then this will become F of S. Okay, so summing on Y, this is F of S. And then, of course, you have these matrix products to deal with. Whoops. T's loaded up there from somewhere. And, of course, these sums will depend on what H and V are. But for the problem of one walk in a wall, H is just this off-diagonal matrix. V has just got two non-zero matrices. And if you substitute H and V into this equation, sum on K and sum on Y, you get exactly this functional equation. So, to conclude, open problems, apart from solving self-avoiding walks. So these are just minor open problems arising from looking at these various techniques. The first one is the use of Green's functions for approximation and exact methods. So this Green's functions haven't been used much in combinatorics. We used them for finding the orthogonal polynomials for the walks in the strip problem. But I'm curious as to whether this will do anything for random problems, because in solid-state physics they're used a lot for random problems. One thing which I haven't got, which would be interesting for me, is to relate this constant term expression for Z to the functional equation. You know, given the constant term, can you get the functional equation? Or, more importantly, given the functional equation, can you get Zn? And finally, the last open problem is the singularity structure for the free energy from the functional equation. Because the functional equation is a sort of standard method, and it sort of can solve, or you at least write it down for most problems. And it's in some sense analogous to a differential equation. Now, if you want the singularity of the solutions to differential equation, you don't solve the differential equation and look for singularities. You just look at the coefficient of the highest derivative. So what we really nice would be some way of doing analogous sort of thing from this functional equation. So just write down the functional equation. Don't try and get the generating functions, but can you get the singularity structure out of it? So that brings me, in fact, full circle. This was a problem of looking for singularities for a particular model of partially directed walks. So this was a case where we then solved for the generating function and looked at the singularities of the generating function. Now, of course, never being satisfied, what would be nice is if we could sort out these sorts of diagrams for the general case of given the functional equation. Is there some aspect of the functional equation, I just pick out coefficients or something, and then I can predict whether this line hits this line or not without having to solve for the generating function. That's maybe being a long shot, but that's the hope. So on that note, I'll stop.